You know, these days there are any number of stories and even books that are written by folks who claim to have had a near-death experience or have even biologically died and been restored to life. We hear of bright lights and meetings with deceased loved ones, out-of-body spiritual hoverings joined by a sense of needing to return, that it's not yet that person's time. Tom and I know a woman who has a story of having awakened in a body bag in a morgue, toe tag and all. You know that experience deeply impacted her and gave her a sense of purpose for the way she lived the rest of her life. These stories may be met by a sense of skepticism. The validity of these stories of out-of-body experiences, afterlife experiences, or after-death experiences are impossible to prove. Whether we believe these tales or not comes down to a matter of our own belief about life and death, or afterlife after death. The town folks of Maine sure had their ideas about death shaken by an up-close and personal experience with Jesus, as did the Sidonian widow who was visited by the prophet Elijah. In many ways, these stories are similar. Two widows, two sons, two lives doomed. In the time of Elijah, and still in the time of Jesus, the fate of a widow was tenuous at best. There was no social security benefit other than the generosity of the community or a living male heir. There was no pension plan, no life insurance. If the widow is left with no male heir, she is an outcast. Her living no more secure than that or of a leper or any other beggar. Elijah encounters just such a woman when he follows the direction of God. The widow of Zarephath is a follower of Yahweh as well. She's out searching for sticks to build a fire to cook the last meal that she and her son will have before they run out of meal and starve to death. She says to Elijah, "As the Lord your God lives, I have nothing baked and only a handful of meal and a bit of oil." She believes in the Lord and calls on God's name to attest to the validity of her statement. Elijah, too, trusts in the Lord and responds by telling her that God will not let them starve. The jar of meal will not be emptied and the jug of oil will not fail until the 3-year drought is over. The woman puts all her trust in the prophet of the Lord and does as he asks. Not unlike the widow in the temple who gave her two mites, all she had to her name, this woman gives all the sustenance that she has to the one she believes to be a man speaking on behalf of God. All goes as planned for a while. Elijah or God comes through as promised. There's sufficient food for the woman and her household. Then something devastating happens. Her son falls ill and dies. We hear there is no breath left in him. Even rain cannot restore her security now. With no male in the household, there is no hope. The widow is obviously distressed and wondering what on earth this man of God is up to. Elijah, too, is caught off guard, and he questions God. "What are you doing, God, that the woman who's taking care of me is left to this end?" Elijah lies on the boy 3 times and cries out to God to restore the life of the child. God listens to Elijah's cries, and the boy's life is revived. Was he really dead, or was he merely unconscious? Did the weight of Elijah's body on the child function as some sort of BCE form of CPR? Do the answers to these questions matter? Maybe, maybe not. They sure didn't to the widow or to Elijah. The boy's life was restored, and in the restoration of his life, however that came about, his mother's life was restored as well. The same was true for the widow of Nain. Jesus has left Capernaum, where he healed the slave of a faithful centurion, and he enters the town of Nain, a beautiful town. Today, it doesn't seem so beautiful, though. A death has occurred on this day, and the body is being taken for the requisite burial before sunset. A widow hangs on the bier, entirely distraught. Townspeople follow, distraught as well. They're sad for the death of the son and sad for the fate of the widowed mother. Jesus and his followers could have just continued on their way. He could have offered her condolences, said, "I'm sorry for your loss," and kept moving. But he didn't. He stopped because he had compassion. His compassion led him to action, and he restored the young man's life. And in doing so, he restored the mother's life, just as Elijah had when the nameless widow who cared for him. The townspeople are now afraid. I bet we would be too. Can you imagine the reaction of the morgue employees when our friend Frankie stumbled into the office with a toe tag still on? Their faces must have grown ashen. No doubt they were afraid. Dead was dead then, and dead is dead now, especially if a body has made it to the morgue. In Nain, the fear of those good townspeople was quickly replaced by awe and then worship. Their minds probably went immediately to the story of Elijah and the widow in Sidon. They would have been familiar with that story, which was part of their scripture. So it would come as no surprise that their minds made that connection. Just like Elijah restored the life of the son of the woman in Zarephath, this stranger has restored life to our neighbor's son. He is a prophet. This is an act of God. Was the son of this widow really dead, or had he just lapsed into unconsciousness? Was it pure coincidence that Jesus happened to walk up and say, "Young man, arise," at the very moment in time that his consciousness was restored? Are these stories miraculous resurrection, resuscitation stories, or are they explainable flukes? Again, do the answers to these questions really matter? Does it matter if Elijah accidentally or even intentionally performed the first recorded act of CPR, or if the son of Nain just regained consciousness at the moment Jesus commanded the presumed dead young man to arise? Not really. It really doesn't matter. Or at least it doesn't have to for us to have faith in God. The fact or truth of these stories is that because of the love of God displayed through Elijah and Jesus, lives were restored. Not just the lives of those who had died or were presumed to be dead, but the lives of their mothers and even the community. Never again were their lives the same from these moments on. When you have an up-close and personal experience with Jesus or with God, you cannot remain unchanged. Your life and your faith is restored. There's just no way around that. Did our friend Frankie actually die and come back? Was she in a morgue with a toe tag on? I don't know. But she sure thinks that she was. And because of that, her life will never be the same. An up-close and personal experience with God and Jesus does not have to be anywhere near as dramatic as the stories we've heard today. We can have an up-close and personal life-changing experience at any moment, in even the smallest things. What is required is that we are paying attention and looking for God to act. And furthermore, believing that he will, even in our lives. Pay attention. Your life will be changed.